Good afternoon. I don't suppose there's a single town in New England that hasn't at some time had an unforgettable incident. It may have been a big bank robbery, fire, flood, or funeral, which was so unusual, folks still talk about it. Following my broadcast about the Bowman tomb up in Cuttingsville, Vermont, came clippings of the auction held recently in the old gentleman's house across the way. And since I told you about old Peddler Hill, who was placed in a lead box filled with alcohol up on Blue Job Mountain back of Rochester, New Hampshire, we've had several inquiries. Did you ever hear about the man who was buried sitting up in a chair down in Amesbury? Well, recalling that Ruth Hill from Amesbury had suggested that singular incident as a Yankee yarn, we drove to Amesbury a few weeks ago, and Mrs. Hill took us out to Mount Prospect Cemetery to see the famous tomb of Reuben John Smith, now completely covered with field stones and surrounded by a group of white birches. This tomb was originally made of marble and brick, but today it's sealed up tight, so there's no way of telling whether Reuben is still in his Morris chair or not. That's exactly the way he was buried, in a Morris chair, as any old resident of Amesbury will tell you. It was shortly after the Civil War when Reuben John Smith arrived in Amesbury, Massachusetts from Buffalo, New York. As he was mysteriously reticent about his early life, nothing definite is known about him, except that he was a first-class house painter, and he worked at that trade around Amesbury until he got lead poisoning. In later years, he drove a hack. Then he retired, living all the while in the Green Block, which still stands on the left-hand side of Main Street as you come up from the square. This Mr. Smith was a tall, spare man with a big black wind-blown mustache. He dressed in dark gray or black clothes and almost always wore a dark gray Homburg or a black derby. Quiet, affable, and of a pleasing but retiring disposition, he had only a few intimate friends. He was an expert checker player, and he took great interest in lawsuits, spending much of his time in and around the courthouse. He was never known to have been married. Why this gentleman should spend so much money on a marble tomb and so much time in it before he died is one of Amesbury's pet mysteries. It's a well-known fact that Reuben Smith was fond of the view from his tomb overlooking the valley, and he was always inviting his friends to come out and see my coffin next Sunday afternoon. Several folks told us he always spoke of his tomb as his marble coffin. He had seats in it, and the door faced west. And he said he was going to sit in one of those chairs facing the sunset after he'd passed on, in spite of the fact that the big steel door would be between him and the view that he liked so well. Now, according to the files of the Amesbury and Haverhill newspapers, it was 1888 when Reuben Smith went to the office of the Patton's Hollow Marble Works and asked for Charles Davis. "Charlie," he said brightly, "here's a sketch of the coffin I want built on my lot over in Mount Prospect Cemetery." And he unrolled a plan of the sarcophagus. "I want the finest Vermont marble you can get, and the best Boston brick. I've already ordered the steel door from E.T. Bannum and Company up in Detroit, Michigan, and I've ordered two big keys, too." The dimensions of the so-called coffin were 10 feet 6 inches long, 5 feet 6 inches wide, and 7 feet 6 inches high, and the plans called for a flat, low-pitched roof. Miss Annie Webster, well-known Amesbury storekeeper and holder of several town offices, told Ruth Hill, "I was 17 when that tomb was being constructed, and I well remember seeing Reuben Smith watching with great interest the placing of the marble slabs. He stayed there all the time telling the stonemasons just how he wanted the bricks laid and the big door put on." Other people told us that for the next 10 years, Reuben went to his tomb every weekend and sat there for hours, gazing across the valley. He was always there on Sunday afternoons in the fall because he loved the autumn scenery, and he often boasted that no better view could be had in Amesbury than from his coffin. After a lingering illness, Reuben John Smith passed away on January 23rd, 1899. His will, made 10 years before, read in part, "After the payment of my just debts and funeral expenses, I bequeath first to the trustees of the Mount Prospect Cemetery the sum of $500 to be deposited in the Provident Institution for Savings, the income of which shall be used to care for my lot and tomb. Second, to Charles W. Sawyer of Amesbury, I bequeath the sum of 5 cents. Third, upon my decease, I desire to be placed in the tomb I am about to erect in a sitting position, in an easy chair of the reclining type. In case I should die before the tomb is completed, I hereby order my executor to finish that project and pay for it out of my estate. There were other minor provisions for the executor and the undertaker. Three well-known Amesbury residents witnessed the will, and Reuben signed it in a shaky hand. If we are to believe the newspaper clips, and there's no reason to doubt them in this case, Amesbury was all agog the day of Reuben's funeral. According to a Mr. Quimby's diary, the 26th day of January, 1899, was cloudy, with southwest wind and a white frost in the early morning. Mr. Quimby noted that because of his rheumatism, he didn't venture downtown to see the strange procession, but everybody else did. It was just like circus day, the papers reported, with over 1,000 spectators lined up in front of the green block to see the body brought out in its chair. However, the crowd's curiosity was only partially satisfied, as the chair and its occupant were enshrouded in a black cloth. The Boston papers commented, "No event in recent years has caused so much speculation or brought out such crowds in Amesbury as the death and funeral of Mr. Reuben Smith. The Morris chair, the late Mr. Smith will occupy until doomsday, was one of his own choice, he having selected it after giving several styles a trial. It is of sturdy oak and is upholstered in russet leather." Now, when Reuben called on his friend Undertaker Austin several years before his death, he said, "Look, if it's a cold day when you bury me, I'll want an overcoat." And Mr. Austin said, "Well, what about your hair, Reuben? Getting kind of thin, ain't it?" "Yes," said Reuben reflectively, "I suppose it is. Yes, I guess you better have a hat handy in case it storms or is cold." It was down to 40 the day he was carried to his tomb in the new Morris chair. And Undertaker Austin saw to it that Reuben had a new hat to wear and a nice warm overcoat. One resident of Amesbury who was present told us, "Reuben looked as natural as life, leaning back in his Morris chair, just like he was taking his noonday nap." The papers mentioned a tin box which was placed inside the tomb, containing a copy of his will and all the clippings about his death and funeral. But if you mention this to the old-timers in Amesbury, they're likely to ask, what about the other things he had put in that tomb? Now, it may have been just idle gossip, but many say that Reuben insisted on having a table with a pack of playing cards, his favorite checkerboard, a couple of candles and some matches, one of the keys to the big steel door, and a quart of whiskey. And there's also a rumor around town that he offered a reward of $100 to anyone who would spend the first night with him in his fine new marble tomb. Reuben expected to rest in his reclining chair in unmolested peace until the crack of doom. But a crack of thunder and a bolt of lightning smote his marble sarcophagus sometime around 1920 and tore it asunder. The lightning knocked the heavy marble slabs every which way, shattered the bricks into dust, and the ornate steel door, which may have attracted the lightning, was wrenched clean off and flung some distance away. Strange that a solid stone building should be struck by lightning like that, and nothing else harmed, but it was. And when the storm was over, cemetery officials gasped as they appraised the damage. Hastily, the tomb was repaired, and then it was completely sealed up, door and all, with large field stones. We were told on the QT that after the lightning hit, Reuben's remains were taken out and placed in a regular grave, but I have no verification of this. And my guess is he's still inside in his easy chair, the way he wanted to be. Now, while we're on the subject of coffins, whatever became of that big mahogany box that Mad Jack Percival had built when he was captain of the United States frigate Constitution? Old Ironside, you may remember, was in Madagascar on a world cruise, and Captain Mad Jack picked up some fine mahogany planks. On the way back to the United States, Captain Percival had himself measured by the ship's carpenter, and the planks made into a handsome coffin. When the casket was finished and all carved fancy and polished up, Captain Mad Jack had it set up in his cabin just in case. And one night, during a frightful storm, his terrified cabin boy wailed, "We are sinking, sir, we are sinking. We'll all be in heaven before morning." "That's all right by me, boy," roared Mad Jack. "I got more friends on the other side than I have on this. However, I ain't climbing into that box just yet." Old Ironsides rode out the storm, and old Mad Jack never did occupy his fancy carved mahogany casket. Several years after he retired from the Navy and went to Dorchester to live, on the street that now bears his name, he put his coffin out front of his house, and for years it served as a glorified watering trough for thirsty dogs and horses. I've been trying for years to find someone who knows what happened to that solid mahogany horse trough casket which came off the Constitution, and stood for such a long time on Percival Street in Dorchester. Somebody ought to know about it. And by the way, do any of you know what's behind that intriguing inscription on a tombstone in Little Compton, Rhode Island? That old burying ground on Little Compton Common contains many historic gravestones. One honoring the great Indian fighter Benjamin Church. And another, a large white marble memorial to Elizabeth Alden Mullen, the first white woman born in New England. She was the daughter of the Pilgrims, Plymouth Pilgrims, John Alden and Priscilla Mullen. And her name was Elizabeth Alden Peabody. Now, nearby that historic monument, there are two headstones which are worth seeing. We photographed them just a few days ago. The one at the right reads, "In memory of Lydia, ye wife of Mr. Simeon Palmer, who died December 26th in 1754, in ye 35th year of her age." The other headstone at the left reads, "In memory of Elizabeth, who should have been the wife of Simeon Palmer, who died August the 14th, 1779, in the 64th year of her age." I suspect that behind that cemetery secret, there may have been a little scandal. But there's none in the story, Abigail of the Pines, which was written around this romance of old Rhode Island. Do any of you know how much of Abigail of the Pines is true? And what do you know about Simeon Palmer and the Elizabeth, who should have been his wife?